Dave Moore on Today FM.
Good morning, Dave.
How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How
are you? Let's get the elephant in the room out of the way. We're very good friends, Ross.
Yes, we've known each other a long time.
That is not, however, an excuse to come into my radio show. You have to have something under your belt, and boy, do you. As I gave people a glimpse of in my intro, you have done a lot of documentaries. People know that about you, but they won't know, or maybe won't expect, I don't think, the current one, Beat the Lotto. This is, it's a bit of a departure for you. I really, really enjoyed this. I enjoy all your documentaries, but I really enjoyed this because it was a bit different. And to someone who hasn't seen it or heard of it, what is the story behind this story?
Well, basically, it's the story of a group of people that tried to, I suppose, commit a heist on the lottery. A legal heist,
yeah.
By buying all of the combinations. So basically filling out 2 million of those little boxes, 6 in each, and collecting all the possible combinations to guarantee a win.
See, I've been saying this, you know, for years, that the stats, the likelihood of you winning the lotto, these numbers are brilliant, right? And then what's great about this is that somebody who loved numbers features very early in this, Stefan, one of the main characters in the story that you tell. And he just kind of sat there and went, hang on a second, how many combinations would there actually be in 36 numbers, choose 6 or 32, choose whatever it was at the time. And what's brilliant is kind of seeing that worked out to, as you said, almost 2 million, and then realizing that, well, hang on, if you want to spread this all the way across numbers, you have to fill in 2 million of those pen marked pieces of paper that we used to do the lotto on.
Yeah, 2 million of the little boxes times 6. It's like 12 million strokes of a pen.
12 million.
Basically. But they did it by hand. Like, you wouldn't have had the kind of technology to stick it through a computer and off you go. So they did it that way. And yeah, it became a very exciting few days, because when you think about it, there's a draw on Wednesday and then a draw on Saturday. So you just have 3 days to try and do all this.
And what's brilliant about this story is, I mean, look, we don't want to give too much away. I want people to go and see the Beat the Lotto story. We won't give anything away that will not make you not enjoy the story. But they were waiting for a very specific set of circumstances to occur before they could go and do their legal heist.
Yeah, this is the maths bit.
Yeah.
So basically, if you think about it, every time you match 4 numbers, you get a prize. Or any time you match 5 numbers, you get a prize. If you buy all the combinations, you match 4 tons of times, 6,500 times actually.
And
if you
one of those is a prize that adds up the money.
Exactly. So what they were looking for was, you know, the lottery was so beloved at the time and it was such a wonderful institution, and they were always coming up with these great ways to make the game more exciting. And one of the great ways to make the game more exciting was a €100 bonus for a match 4 on this particular weekend.
And that £100, because we're back in the 90s.
Yeah, you're right. £100 bonus if you matched 4 that particular weekend. And that meant they knew exactly how much they would get for each match 4. Whereas usually it used to be kind of like divided out. One week it could be £12, another week it could be £35.
But this was a rollover from the Wednesday. Nobody won it on the Wednesday. It was going into a bank holiday weekend. That was an important thing as well, because people were a bit more spendy, I guess, and things like that. So the money, because it was a rollover, it encourages more people to enter. Therefore, the prize gets bigger. So all of a sudden you had this Wednesday rollover. You had the bank holiday. It was a May bank holiday weekend in 1992.
Yes.
Yeah. And then let's talk about the lads then who decided that this would be the right time to try and pull this off. Like, what I loved about these fellas, and what's amazing about the documentary, is you have them now talking about it. This isn't actors, you know, portraying the, sure, there's a bit of that in, and we'll talk about documentary making, I think, in a few minutes, but you have the lads sitting down talking heads. These are the boys who got involved in their, I suppose, 30s, and now here they are today talking about it, and they're retired and they're like, yeah, we had a bit of crack, and their attitude was, it was just so much fun. And then what's great is, as Ross described earlier on, you have 3 days to do this. The rollover on the Wednesday happens. You've got the Thursday, you've got the Friday, and then the lotto draw is the Saturday evening, 8 o'clock on the television, like it always is and was. So you then have to do all of the 12 million strokes that Ross talked about, those pieces of paper. They all have to be run through the machines in the newsagents. And then you have to have the money, the cash to pay the newsagents, but you also have to have the physical sheets of paper put through. So the amount of manpower is unbelievable.
Yeah, and they had kind of planned all that out, and they had, you know, and they were going to divide it amongst people, and they didn't want to bring too much attention to what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they probably didn't even think of why they didn't want to bring too much attention, but they just wanted to quietly do it.
Yeah.
But unfortunately for them, you know, I think some people probably tried to buy a few too many tickets in a couple of the shops, and it did start bringing attention, and the press became aware of it, and the lottery also became aware.
Because the lottery had sophisticated technology, even for the early 90s, they had sophisticated technology that allowed them to see, well, hang on, that doesn't make sense. Why have we sold that many tickets in that area at this time when that's never happened before? Because they had all the computer stuff fed back into their central computer.
Yeah, we had like the most advanced lottery in Europe. It was an incredible organization. Not only did everyone love it, but it was like technologically secure. In 1980s Ireland, things didn't work.
Yes.
In 1990, but did you ever hear of the lottery not working?
Well, you actually, know what I mean? Or you say that, but I do have a lottery story I want to share with you, right? In 1993, when I did my leaving cert, in the summer of 1993, I got a job out in Blake's Cross in Lusk in County Dublin. It was just in a random warehouse. And my job was to assemble the new national lottery machines. These are the ones that I used to work in a news agency, or a petrol station news agency, so I remember this. They had a red laser pen that would swipe across the barcode of a lottery ticket or a scratch card and would tell you whether or not they've won. And my job was simply to assemble two pieces of metal and screw on both machines, plug them in. And I did thousands of these machines, thousands with my mates. And at the end, in September of 1993, they went and plugged them all in and they were very excited. And I was like ringing the house phone, ringing the fella who employed me going, how did the switch on go? And he went, you didn't make them right. And they all broke. I broke the entire network of lottery machines. And I apologize to the National Lottery for that waste of time. I think it was literally a port on the back of the two machines had to be one and they didn't tell us which one. And we just, so randomly we just chose one and put it in. And obviously some of them worked and some of them didn't. So I apologize. Definitely not a documentary in that. But you have made the Katie Taylor documentary, the Rachel Blackmore documentary. You've done stuff with the Boys in Green. You've done Shane Lowry, did the Girls in Green, their trip to Australia down under in 2023. When Ali came to Ireland, Anthony Foley, the Munster Man documentary. And they're all kind of sporting ones. You've also done lots of other types of documentaries, but I suppose the sporting ones are the headline grabbers. But this is definitely, this Beat the Lotto one, I think, feels like a departure for you in a little bit in a very exciting way. But you've been planning this for a long. How long have you been trying to make this documentary?
It has taken me over 10 years, Dave.
10 yeah. years. How come it's so hard?
Oh, I don't know. Bore people. But obviously, there's the difficulty of getting the funding and you get a few kind of knockbacks along the way. It's very tricky to put together a budget, I suppose, that's substantial enough to tell a story like this well, even though it's still, you know, you're never going to have like movie level budgets, you know.
Yeah.
So that's a difficulty. And then COVID came in the middle of that, just when we were starting to shoot. I mean, we've forgotten all about that, but that did happen.
Yeah.
And so there's all these little setbacks along the way. And then honestly, like, I loved this story so much and there's so many interesting twists and turns in it and everything. I wanted to make it as good as it could be. And I wanted to, and I did a lot of tweaking, you know, along the way to try and make it as good as it can be.
One of the ways you cut corners in the cost was you employed children for slave labor. My two boys are in this. And in fact, they were so much younger when you shot this. You went to my house, was it a couple of years back?
Yeah, and that I think was because of COVID. I was like asking my friends, can I film somebody filling out some lotto slips?
Because that was because part of the movie is obviously the story, as Ross said, about filling out these, like making 12 million pencil and pen strokes on pieces of paper. So you needed to have footage of that. That footage didn't exist. There's footage from the news archives. There's footage from lots of things you've used in the documentary. But sometimes when you make a documentary, this is one of the things I wanted to ask you about, is you have to employ, now my kids aren't actors, but actors, you have to employ people to portray certain people at a certain age, at a certain time, if the footage doesn't exist, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's a really fun thing to play around with because it's not quite sort of like drama movies and it's not quite documentary. It falls somewhere in between. And like, I don't like the idea of kind of creating scenes where actors are talking to each other, but it's fun to kind of do visual, you know, come up with visual ways of telling a story using actors or extras.
While an authentic voiceover from someone who's involved is playing, for example.
Exactly. Or they can be visual sequences in and of themselves. We've done a few things like that over the years. And we did, I mean, it's kind of in a similar theme. I think about Barney Curley, the guy who fixed a famous horse race in the 70s.
Yeah.
And we had great fun going around. And because Barney used to always wear the same kind of hat, was great. We could just get an actor and just put that hat on him the whole time, you know.
It worked really well.
And he would go and we could just film the hat going places and so on and so forth. So like, but sometimes it's these little visual signifiers that help you to kind of tell the story. And it's great fun.
Well, if you're looking at the movie Beat the Lotto, whether it's in the premiere on Wednesday or whether it's in the autumn time when it comes out, keep your eyes open for appearances from two of the Moore boys. And if you spot them and let me know when they are, I'll give you a prize because it's quick. It's quick. They're in there.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've done a lot of sports stuff. You've done this. You've done things like Bye Bye Now, lots of different documentaries. What's next? Because documentary makers never stop thinking about stories, never stop working on the next thing. If that one took you 10 years, you're probably 7 years into another project now.
Well, there's a few things, I suppose, you're always trying. I mean, just to keep this going as a career, you have to have a few things on the boil, I suppose. But at the moment, we're actually working on a camogie documentary. And we're trying to do something kind of interesting there in terms of a sport that probably hasn't got the attention it deserves, considering the determination, the skill, the commitment that all those players have. They're elite athletes that don't get the attention. So we're looking at maybe following a few of the different camogie counties through the year and getting a real 360 sense of what it's like to play at the top of that sport. So that's one of the things that we're working on, we're really excited about. Yeah.
And no date on that yet? Just because you've got to get through the whole season, I guess.
November, I think, is when it's going to come out.
Okay, keep your eyes open for that one. Ross, quick fire round before you go. I ask all my guests these following questions. What are you currently obsessed with?
I'm currently obsessed with getting through the next few days on my premiere in Dublin Film Festival on Wednesday night. Like, it's hard to think about anything else, honestly. Sorry.
That's okay. And are you speaking at the premiere? Are you doing one of those Q&As and all?
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Documentary makers love making documentaries. Don't like having to talk about them.
No. I don't even like watching them, to be honest with you.
Who's the most famous person in that phone of yours?
Well, I suppose it would have to be Katie Taylor, wouldn't it?
Katie Taylor's pretty famous, in fairness. Yeah, I'll take that any day of the week. Think back to 8-year-old Ross. What school were you in?
I was in a school called St. Gerard's in Bray.
St. Gerard's, okay. So 8 years old, second class. The teacher says, right, take out your lunchbox, boys and girls, or boys, whatever it was. What was in it?
Not a lot. usually just a ham sandwich and a little orange or something like that, yeah.
No, little sneaky snacks from mommy and daddy.
No, we usually get a little, we weren't big into the sweets.
Oh, your dad's a dentist, of course. He would have been smart to go, listen, don't you be having a club milk there and there every day, Ross.
Yeah.
And the final question I ask you, because I ask all my guests, and it's even weirder asking one of my mates this question. Ross, do you wash your legs in the shower?
Dave, I do. And I'm appalled that you don't.
I don't. I never have. Not even once. Except maybe after a five-a-side if I'm filthy. Don't forget to go and see Beat the Lotto. It'll premiere in the Dublin International Film Festival on Wednesday, but it'll come out later on this year. You do not want to miss this. It is an absolutely phenomenal Irish story. Very Irish and brilliant. Ross, thanks so much.
Thank you, Dave.
Dave Moore on Today FM.